Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another episode of America's Most Unwanted, a look at the criminals that are wanted by law enforcement, yet law enforcement seems to have little interest in bringing them to justice. If I was a cynical person, I might be tempted to say that peace, as in P-E-A-C-E, work, has been replaced by peace, P-I-E-C-E, work. It makes better fiscal sense to hand out traffic tickets than expend time and energy chasing down some guy that has failed to appear in court on a drug possession charge. Enter the world of bail bondsmen. Joining me today, I have a veritable treasure trove of knowledge on the subject. Bail bond recovery agent, William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine today, Simon. Thanks for inviting me to the show, brother.
And recovery agent Matthew Todd. Matt, always good to talk to you.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me on.
Also, we have Rod Dowston, Managing General General Agent for Surety 3, and someone has a minor bird. Okay. Rod Dowston, Managing General Agent for Surety 3 and Palmetto Insurance Corporation. Rod, always good to talk to you.
Simon, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you for inviting me back to your show.
And also, we are joined by Mark Hefferman, National Managing General Agent for Security Corporation of America. Mark, this is the first time we have spoken. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me on the show, Simon.
Listeners, if you have questions, please feel free to call in to our switchboard, area code 646-378-1120. And I seriously doubt that you can stump this group of experts. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's program, which is going to be about pre-trial release, I'd love to get the panel's thoughts on a story that surfaced this week out of Pennsylvania. Authorities in Berks County have opened an investigation after a bail bondsman allegedly tried to pass off a counterfeit bail bond. Dean Gurney, 47, was arrested on Friday. He's a licensed agent with Ace Bail Bonds of downtown Reading, place I've never been, and he's charged with forgery. Actually, he's charged with a whole litany of things, and he's being held on $1 million bail. Okay, gentlemen, I'm the totally ignorant one here. I had assumed that if I got arrested for scaring my neighbor's pet gecko, you know, by pulling faces at it, as in the one that Geico uses. All right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'd get hauled off to the local clink and pulled up in front of a judge, and he'd say, "I'm held on $100 bond." Now, I assumed that my wife, Jan, who's a really nice lady, you know, would just come up to the police station, you know, explain that I'm a complete nutcase, hand over $10, sign a form, promising I'd be a good boy, and spring me from pokey. But obviously I am wrong. What is counterfeit bond?
well, Simon, go ahead.
We got a lot of background. I don't know if it's Rod's phone or if it's Todd. Your phone, Todd. But I'm catching background on your speaker back there.
No, it's not mine.
All right, y'all pay attention to y'all's sound quality here. But a counterfeit bond is just like counterfeit money, counterfeit anything. It's just they send one over there and it's fake, and they don't know it until later, and you get out of jail. It's pretty easy to do.
Well, what happens, Culber? Simon, the bondsman went to a printer, had powers, meaning power of attorney, reproduce the same as the one that he had. What he did is made copies of them and stamped them with numbers on them. And when he did that, he presented original powers, but meaning fake, that they did not come from the insurance company. We had an agent did that.
Okay.
Simon, that story makes an interesting headline, but the much bigger story came out of Philadelphia as well last week. You gave the example that your wife goes to the jail, she posts $10, and she has a promise to pay the balance. Well, Philadelphia had a system just like that for many, many years without private bondsmen. And they would ask the mother or the wife or the friend to sign to guarantee that the person will appear in court. Well, over the years, about 61,000 of those people failed to appear. And no one looked for these fugitives, and more importantly, no one went to collect the balance of the bail. So, in other words, no one went to your wife and said, "By the way, you promised to pay the $100 if he fled. Where's the balance of the 90?" No one did that. And last week in Philadelphia, they decided that their best solution to this problem would be just to write off $1 billion in uncollectible bail. So it's nice that there's a headline saying that one crooked bondsman may have used one phony document, but the publicly funded release programs that are touted as alternatives to private bail are abysmal failures. They have $1 billion of bail money in Philadelphia that's owed, and the city decided, well, our best course of action here is just to write it off and forget about ever collecting it.
$1 billion.
In jurisdiction after jurisdiction, these release programs ask people to promise on their word that they'll show up in court, and they don't. And when they fail to appear, a bench warrant is issued. No one has the time or resources to serve the warrant and go out and apprehend the fugitive. And the counties don't collect any of the forfeited bail money. And the alternative to that is what we do that are all on the phone here. We pledge real assets to guarantee that people will appear in court. We fulfill our obligation and make sure they do, in fact, appear in court. And those that become fugitives, we go out and get them at no cost to the taxpayers. So there's nothing wrong with an occasional headline saying, oh, hey, here was a bondsman who appears to be crooked. But the overwhelming majority of the time, private bail functions way better than these harebrained, publicly funded release programs.
Simon, let me make sure I understand this. This happened in Philadelphia, the bondsman put in the bad bonds?
No, that would actually be, what, 8th Bell Bond out of Reading, where I used to live.
It was Reading,
oh, Reading.
Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay, because first of all, Philadelphia doesn't have commercial bail.
Right, that was my point. And that's why Philadelphia just wrote off $1 billion in money they say they cannot collect from consumers who guaranteed bail bonds.
Right. It's the same as Chicago. Chicago, Philly, they don't use commercial bail. They use the system of the court and the jail.
Well, okay. Today's program is all about pre-trial. And Cobra sent me an absolutely fascinating video. Of course, video doesn't work so well on the radio, but I have stripped out the audio part, and I found it really, really thought-provoking. So you're going to hate me because I'm going to play it, and while I'm doing that, I'm going to investigate the switchboard and find out who wants to talk to us. So here it is, pre-trial.
I work for Pre-Trial Services. I started in July of 2005, and I left in February of 2007. I was a pre-trial investigator.
No, I never heard of it.
If that's like going to court.
I left because there became political pressure to alleviate the overcrowding of the jail, and their solution was to go to pretrial and ask pretrial to start releasing more people than not normally released. Rape, robbery, charges such as that. I was asked by my supervisor to reevaluate those cases and reconsider releasing those people, whereas before it would have just been no. There was no focus to release indigent people from jail while I was there. We went by a standard questionnaire that we asked them, and at no time was that person's income taken into any consideration. Those people would stay in jail. The ideal defendant for pretrial services to release would be someone who we felt would show up for court. They had a stable job, they possibly owned a home, but they had community ties. We were required to speak with at least one or two references who would be willing to vouch for them. I do not believe that it helped with the overcrowding of the jail. The pretrial services focused on indigent people, that would alleviate the jail overcrowding, because pretrial would be allowed to release those people that could not otherwise afford to bond out themselves. For people who think that pretrial services comes with a secure bond, I would say that they're not familiar with the program. With my experience there, that is not true. All the cases where an individual has been released into the program has always been with an unsecured bond. And I know this because I worked at pretrial services for 2 years and I experienced it every day. Pretrial services is using taxpayers' money to release defendants that could otherwise afford to bond themselves out of jail.
Oh, my pastime?
What you're saying is that instead of going to a bail bondsman and having to put up your own assets, the government is now fulfilling that guarantee to the guarantor on a bail bond?
I believe that pretrial services competed with bondsmen because we were looking to release the same type of defendants as bondsmen. for reviewing the documents where it clearly states that one of their objectives is the abolishment of shadow bondsmen. Looking back, I can see how they are trying to reach that objective.
Suppose the person flees.
When a defendant released under pretrial services did not appear at court, nothing happened to the pretrial investigator responsible. No questions were ever gone back to the pretrial investigator about why they were released. I believe that there are a couple ways that private bail industries are more effective than pretrial. Mainly, if a defendant under pretrial does not appear at court, one of two things happens. Either failure to appear, warrant just goes on record, and depending on the charge, nothing's really done and it just kind of sits there. For more serious charges, police officers such as my husband, who's a newborn sergeant, has to put his life on the line to go out to find these poor people, versus bondsmen, when they bond somebody out of jail, they have the responsibility to go find that person. I am not a bondsman, and I am doing this, though, because I'm a taxpayer, and I know that my taxes are going to release these defendants that have the ability to bond themselves as well.
And frankly, the taxpayer can't afford any more burdens. Our governments, from the local all the way up to the federal level, are just wasting our future. Wasting it.
They need to vote for House Bill 728 because it will save the taxpayers a lot of money and keep dangerous criminals off the street.
And that is a rather depressing little little piece. And on the line, we have Mark Jenkins of Second Chance Bail Bonds. Mark, welcome. You have a question for the panel. Fire away.
Yes, I was online because someone had sent me a thing about looking at Sureties 3 and what they have to offer for bail bondsmen. So this question is for Mark. Hello?
Yep, Mark's here.
This is Mark, yes. But I'm not with Surety 3. I'm with Surety Corporation of America out of Miami.
Right, but I was looking on Surety 3 because I've been listening to this. But in Surety 3, I had got some information from them to look on their line about all the things that they offer. And I would like to know, what are some of the things that you offer, Bail Bond Nate?
For Bail Bond Agents, my company is the exclusive national general agent for U.S. Specialty Insurance Company. And we offer a whole host of resources and services to licensed bail agents. But I was under the impression this show was going to be more focused on pretrial release programs.
Okay. Well, they have a continuous education program for bail bonds that they pay for. Any agents under them, they pay for the continuous education of them. And they also do it for, like, family members. Do y'all offer those kind of benefits?
When you say continuous education, do you mean the continuing education that's required of all licensed agents?
Yes.
Okay. In Florida, to maintain a license as a bail agent, you're required to take 14 hours of continuing education every 2 years by the date of your birthday. We as a company don't pay for that for any of our agents because the State Association of Bail Agents that pays for the lobbyists and works for the industry. Well, that association depends on revenues from continuing education in order to survive and help the industry. So we don't compete with the State Association on continuing education, if that was your question.
No, I didn't ask you, did you compete with them? I asked you, do y'all pay for your agents to go to the continuous education because it's a requirement? Do you help fund the requirement so that your agents can stay licensed?
No, we support the state association, the Florida Bail Agents Association, and we would encourage anyone with a license in Florida to get their continuing education through that association so that the lobbyists can be paid and for the betterment of the industry.
Okay, I guess I have to leap in here because this has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with pretrial release. But
I think
it's only fair to let Rod Dowston talk about Surety 3. Do you have the same policy or a different policy?
Well, we have the same policy. We encourage all agents to join the national, state, and local bail bond associations only if those bail bond associations do not have a personal interest in the president being a part of that association. We don't condone any president or of any association to have a personal interest in being a part of that association. But, yes, we do offer our agents continuing education, and it's paid for by our company. We actually do that as well as we send scholarships out to the parents, the agents, their kids, and we pay for their education. We believe in education. Without education, we will lose this game and this war among pretrial and bail bonds. We have to be educated. Without being educated, we will lose this war with pretrial. So, yes, we pay for all of that for our agents.
Okay, Mark Jenkins, does that answer your question?
Yes.
All righty. Let's move on to the subject of pretrial. Pretrial release. I'd love to get everyone's comments about that basically advert that I played. Mark, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts on pretrial?
Simon, I think you have two marks on the line. Is that correct?
Yeah. But I want the Mark that has a surname that doesn't begin with J. So that would be you.
Certainly. I don't know that the clip you've heard was so much an advertisement as a statement from a woman that had experience working for a large publicly funded pretrial release program. I think these programs started with the best of intentions, actually dating back to the 60s in our country when there was a lot of good social changes. And
it,
I think
it was
initially,
61 and it was New York.
Right. And so these bail reform programs came out of the intention would be there should be some type of mechanism to serve criminal defendants who are nonviolent first offenders and truly indigent. And that was the criteria in the very beginning. If we're all innocent until we're proven guilty, which is the case in the United States, then it seems fundamentally unfair that one person should have to stay in jail when the only difference between him and a person who bonded out is money. And so early on, out of the Bail Reform Act in New York and other jurisdictions, Florida was one of the ones at the forefront as well. They said, we ought to have a program to serve nonviolent, indigent, first-time offenders with strong community ties. And ironically, most bail agents agreed with that. The problem is that those programs have grown exponentially, and in most jurisdictions in the United States, they no longer even screen for indigency. So the last time that, for example, Jose Canseco got arrested in Miami, Florida, he was released on a pretrial publicly funded release program. So even if you're a millionaire and you check in the keys to your Ferrari and your Rolex when you're arrested, you're released on the taxpayer dole. Like many government programs, they turn out to be inefficient and expensive, and they end up primarily serving just to release people from jail with no thought to the consequences of what happens when the person fails to appear and becomes a fugitive. So in jurisdiction after jurisdiction in the United States, you've seen these programs go completely out of control, and in many cases, 20, 30, 40, 45% of the people they release subsequently fail to appear, have no interest in coming back to court. They become fugitives, and the counties don't have the money to serve all those felony warrants.
Okay. I was reading some documents out of the DOJ and some other government entities earlier this morning. And they tend to show a slightly different idea. That they tend to show pretrial release as a glowing success. The stats are old, but that they claim that in Florida, the jail population went from 117%, meaning that there was overcrowding, to 80%, and 93% of the people they let out on pretrial turned up for their court date. And personally, I think it's a load of punk. But I'd love to hear what you think.
I'd like to see the study. I mean, every academic study I've ever seen says that number is closer to 37% failure to appear. the most comprehensive academic studies that I've seen say that defendants released on surety bond are about 28% less likely to fail to appear than similar defendants released on their own recognizance. And they also show that if they do fail to appear, they're over 50% more likely to remain at large for an extended period of time if they're on anything other than a financially secured bail. The government's own statistics, you said Department of Justice, every study I've ever seen based on felony release decisions across the country show that financially secured forms of release have a much better success rate at guaranteeing appearing. So you said you reviewed some statistics. I'd love to see that study, because every academic study that I'm aware of shows that financially secured release does a better job of ensuring appearance.
Oh, I will happily send the study to you. I'm laughing because I read it and I went, yeah, right. Rod, give me your thoughts on this subject.
Well, Simon, my thoughts on this subject is very long. And as was previously stated by Mark, that was the original intentions of pretrial release or any pretrial release programs, because they come in different names now. My only problem with it is that it changed from what it's supposed to be until what it is today. And today, the stats of pretrial release is more better than the stats of bail bonding. And the reason I say that is because now today you have bail bonds attached to a pretrial program. And I don't see where that is fair to
to the bondsman, and I'm going to tell you the reason why. The reason why is that if you attach a bail bond to a pretrial release, who's responsible for the pretrial release? No one. There's no one going to look for that person. There's no one going to bring that person back. But if you attach that bond to that pretrial release, we as bail bondsmen got to make it our business and effort to get that person back to justice so they can face the charges and that citizens of the U.S. or the county or the state in which you live in don't have to pay or foot that bill for the recovery. But when you take them to the jail to surrender them, it's where the problem really starts, because the law enforcement officer are the one who have to book them into the system instead of the bondsman. So what that does, when a bond is attached to a pretrial, it makes the pretrial stats goes up and the bondsman stats goes down. And we are the ones that went and found that person and brought them back to justice, brought them into the Sally Port, but yet we can't surrender them because only a law enforcement officer can surrender them. And that takes our stats down. So now when they go in front of the finance committee or whoever it is that they need to get their funding from, oh, look at us. We have brought back 90% of our people that miss court. But look at the bondsmen. Guess what? They haven't brought back anyone. I don't like that. I hate that with a passion.
Let me give you a couple statistics to back this all up. In 26 counties that were surveyed in Florida, they were attaching, this is a 2011 report, but it's also a revised 2013. This is the OPEGA report that's put out periodically. One thing interesting I noticed was Polk County released 5,378 people to pretrial. However, 96%, that's 96%, 96% all had to go with a bond as well. And like Duval is about 61%, and various counties across the state, you know, they're attaching these bonds. I agree exactly with Rod said. Our stats are going down. Theirs are going up. Eventually they'll just say, you know, bondsmen aren't doing your job. We're doing a better job. But let's take it one step forward. I'm coming up with a new plan that if I was in charge of the jail, I'm going to do this to you. I'm going to give you ROR. I'm going to give you a pretrial. I'm going to give you a bond. And then I ain't going to let you out of jail. I'm going to hold you in jail because you might not show back up. Now, you think that's stupid. Well, what could be more stupid than, see, we let pretrial come in and trying to get rid of pretrial, oh, man. And then we start showing that pretrial ain't working out so good. But anytime the government has access to your wallet, they don't like to let loose. So what they're coming up with now is we're going to go ahead and attach a bond to that to make sure you show back up. All right, why do we need pretrial release and a bond attached? We don't. We never did. We still don't. And also, how is this fair to the defendant? It's like, damn it, we're going to put two ropes on your ass because we don't think you'll show back up on pretrial, so we're going to put a bondsman on you too. We're going to double jeopardy right from Jump Street. You know why? It's very simple. When they're released on pretrial, along with a bond, this poor guy's got to pay twice. He's going to pay 10% to the bondsman, he's going to pay 3% to the state, and he's going to get piss tested, drug tested, and everything else kind of tested, violating his civil rights all the way down the line. I mean, somewhere or another, and it's just because the government doesn't want to let loose of something that's not working, so they're going to still try to get a piece of it. And that's the way they come up with it, by attaching a bond to pretrial. Why the hell do you need a... They don't come out and come to your house and pay social visits to see if you're doing good. You're just another number. So all the rhetoric that pretrial says that they do, and Hillsborough County, a lot of people don't know this, but if you've got multiple charges in Hillsborough County, the judge cannot do anything except put you out on pretrial and attach a bond to it. He can't do anything else. He's mandated, if you have multiple charges, to do that. So I'm wondering who come up with all these different ideas. But think about it one time. how would it be that if you were posted a bond and then you couldn't get out of jail because I think you're going to run off? Well, basically, it's the same thing. If they're putting pretrial on you and a bond on you, they're double jeopardizing you. They're violating your rights. Somebody needs to speak up about that.
Colbert, hold on one moment, Simon. Let me ask Colbert a question. Colbert, how can they do that if we paying all these lobbyists to lobby for us through all these agencies that we have social, as Mark eloquently put it, to join all these different places? How can we do it if we got all these lobbyists? That's what the problem. That's the purpose of the lobbyists, isn't it?
Hey, listen, man.
Well, I think I can answer that question.
No, listen. Them lobbyists, listen, there's a couple of them down Fort Lauderdale. It's like these bondsmen said, I gave up my bail bond like I said, I'm going to go to work for pretrial so I can straighten out pretrial. No, you're not. You found a way to backdoor and make money off us bondsmen, and they crooked as shit. That's why they're lobbying. They ain't lobbying for us, man. They lobbying for pretrial. You kidding? They getting double dipped.
Okay, Matt, you've been very quiet. I know you're the young pup on the panel, but you know way more than I do. What are your thoughts on pretrial?
Well, I got the same thoughts as Cobra, how this can be even constitutional. Because it basically deprives you, you know, if they put you on where you have to have mandatory piss tests, you have to have, you know, check in before you even go to trial, to me that violates your civil rights right off the bat. And just common sense, you put someone on pretrial, you don't come back, I mean, then you didn't come back because, you know, we as taxpayers are going to pay, you know, what are we going to pay for, you know, him to, you know, cops or authority, the law enforcement to go out. No, that's not going to happen. So, it's basically a part of a business. The jail is run like a business. It's not even common sense. It's ran like a business.
I believe that most jails are run by private industry these days. So, it is a business.
When you go shopping, Simon, for some of the Roman noodles that you get, I'm going to charge you $1, okay? But then you're going to have to pay 3 more cents because I don't think I've got to sell you the bag to put them in. I mean, it's a crock of shit for pretrial. Why? You know, when I hear some of these bondsmen that were our lobbyists at one time, they were the biggest advocators against pretrial. Now they're saying, hey, you know, Cobra, probably ought to back off a little bit because we're starting to like this pretrial now because they're letting us bond right along beside them. I said, you idiot, all you're doing is making their numbers go up to where they get a second bite at you and come back and say, bondsmen's ain't working, we're working, here's our numbers. How can they charge, you know, a man 10% bail bond and then the state getting them 50%, 3%, and then they turn it around, and you're guilty until proven innocent because you're going to piss test, you're going to report, you're going to do all this stuff. You on probation. I call it pretrial probation. I don't call it pretrial release. I call it what it is.
Well, hold on. Maybe Mark have an answer for that.
Mark.
Yes, sir.
I thought you were going to jump in.
I don't understand the question.
Okay, Cobra, do you want to try it one more time?
Well, my whole thing is like this. Why have a bond attached to pretrial? Why do we need pretrial in there anyway? Because they're not doing anything. And I believe it's constitutionally unfounded and unsound to put somebody on probation before they've ever been convicted of a crime. And basically, if you look at pretrial, you're being checked up on weekly, you're reporting in, you're piss tested, and you're paying 3 points to them.
Well, I would agree with everything you say, Cobra, except for the fact it is constitutional because the person in jail waives their rights. And I agree with you completely. I think those people in jail are not informed properly. They don't have access to an attorney. And the way the racket works is they're telling ill-informed people at the jail, hey, would you like to stick around and see a judge and go to first appearance and have to pay for a bond? Or would you like to be released tonight through the program? And not knowing any better, these defendants sign whatever they're asked to sign. And then it's exactly as you said. Then they're locked into regular urine tests, paying fees, and in many, many cases it ends up being far more expensive than a private bail bond. It's certainly way more intrusive. That's a question of the people that are arrested are not informed of the consequences of being released on a quote-unquote free pretrial release program. They're absolutely not free, and they're extremely intrusive. But in Florida, the only way anyone can be released from jail pretrial is on a bail. I mean, that's what the statute says. The question is, what's the most effective form of bail? Those programs like you're saying, ROR, these are all different forms.
Diversion.
Study after study shows that the most effective form of bail is financially secured. Through a bondsman where friends and family are financially accountable for the appearance of the defendant.
That's right.
The other silliness with the drug testing and all that is all wonderful until the person decides, you know what, I'd rather not go through these drug tests. I'd rather just flee, and then no one looks for them. There are no consequences. No one has to pay any kind of cab, and we have one more unserved open felony warrant in the system.
Hillsborough County is one of, you know, the Florida 48 counties in Florida, and I'm sure that soon some others will follow. But Hillsborough County, the judge is mandated to put them on both. If they have like three or four charges in a row, you know, you got a charge for open container, driving drunk, and no tag. Well, that's multiple charges. So you're going on pretrial and you're going on a bond as well. To me, that's not constitutional. And nobody's telling the defendant you have an option. That's mandatory in Hillsborough County. And some of the other counties are acting like it's mandatory as well. And I was arguing with a well-known bondsman, not to mention any names, out of Broward, who used to be a big advocate for us, saying, you know, get away with pretrial. But now they believe that attaching a bail bond to pretrial is good. Well, I say it's just the government doesn't want to let loose of something that's failed, and they still want to get their hands wet with the money, but they're not doing anything. They don't have any liability. We should be getting paid by the state some of this money that they're getting. We should be getting some of that money as bondsmen for bringing them back. That's what I think.
Agree.
Okay. I have another audio clip. It's a news item, and I think all of the panel might enjoy it. So here it is.
Some Tarrant County criminal court judges tonight are being accused of misusing their discretion by letting high-risk prisoners out on low-cost personal bonds.
News 8's Brett Shipp joins us now. He's got details for us, Brett.
John and Glory, the program's called Pretrial Release. It's designed to allow a quick, cheap bail, typically for first-time offenders accused of minor crimes. So why are some Tarrant County judges using their discretion to grant speedy release to violent and repeat offenders? Tonight, News 8 investigates. The pretrial release program in Tarrant County is such a success, the county's knocking down off its walls and expanding, letting more prisoners out on a reduced bond, paying 3% to the county instead of 10% to a bail bondsman. To be considered for release by pretrial services in Tarrant County, however, they must meet certain guidelines spelled out recently by program director Michelle Brown.
Well, misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies for the most part.
Specifically, they must have no history of bond forfeitures, no previous felony convictions, and persons charged with first-degree felonies are excluded. But a News 8 investigation has found those guidelines are frequently not followed by the judges who are allowed by law to use their discretion in each case. Remember Christy Radisson, the Fort Worth woman accused of dumping her children on the Jacksboro Highway 2 years ago? After being charged with child endangerment in 2003, she jumped bond and bolted to Europe. A diligent bondsman helped lure her back to court last year where she pleaded guilty. But despite her previous bond forfeiture, District Judge George Gallagher allowed Radice out on pretrial release. Days later, she fled the country again. Daryl Barnett works in the bonding business in Fort Worth. He says Radice is probably gone for good. And what bondsman's going after her now?
There's not a bondsman looking for her. I was on pretrial release, so there's no one liable for her.
Judge Gallagher again used his discretion to grant pretrial release to convicted sex offender Brian Collins last year. Collins had served time in the state pen and failed to register as a sex offender when he was released, thus committing his second felony offense. Yet Gallagher allowed Collins out on pretrial release.
Yeah, I do. I think the judge was wrong.
The father of Collins' 10-year-old victim says he's shocked the judge would show sympathy to a sex offender.
From what he's done in the past, and I think he'll still continue to do it, and I think it's wrong. I think the guy has a problem.
And for a judge to let him out for...
I think the judge has a problem, too.
Judge Gallagher also granted pretrial release to Eric Dwayne McCarroll of Arlington, despite being charged with a first-degree felony. At one point, McCarroll forfeited his $150 bond. We tried to find him at his address listed with pretrial release.
I'm looking for Eric Dwayne McCarroll.
Yes, sir.
Eric Dwayne McCarroll, does he live here?
No, sir, he doesn't.
Have you ever heard of him before?
No, sir, I haven't.
Judge Gallagher says McCarroll has since shown up again in court. But the judge declined to speak with News 8 on camera about the McCarroll or any other case. He did, however, defend his decisions at a public meeting last week.
And if we feel that the people are better served by using pretrial than a bondsman, or if the system is better served by using pretrial than the bondsman, we as the judges have the discretion to make that call.
Indeed, Gallagher is not the only Tarrant County judge choosing to use his discretion in allowing accused offenders pretrial release. John Dewan Shepherd, charged with the first-degree felony count of delivering and manufacturing drugs, given pretrial release by Judge Elizabeth Berry. Angel Lucille Wilburn, charged with causing serious bodily injury to a child, pretrial granted by Judge Robert Gill. Milo Edward Garcia had previously jumped bail when Judge Wayne Salvant granted him pretrial release.
As a judge, I'm going to look at it the way I see fit to make it work.
But Tarrant County Sheriff Dee Anderson says it appears to him that some judges have carried their discretion too far.
When you look at a listing like that, when you see someone that has those kind of charges against them, obviously that doesn't pop in your mind that this would be a good candidate for pretrial.
County Commissioner J.D. Johnson, a strong proponent of pretrial release, says the guidelines may need to be revisited.
I would assume that since you've shown me this list, that I'm going to be doing some review on the ones that I'm looking at with some of these judges. But yes, I think that we do need to take a look at our overall program and see what it is that the judges are allowing pretrial release to write bonds on.
District Clerk Tom Wilder also wants commissioners to look at the program's cost to taxpayers, about $900,000 a year. He says compare that with the roughly $2 million a year brought in by regular bail bonds. But as of tonight, the program is still slated for expansion, and we will see what happens. Gloria and John?
All right. Keep us informed.
I will.
Thank you.
Gonna switch.
Okay. I'm sure I have a bunch of rabid dogs on the line. I don't know who to ask first. Mark, you're our guest, so I'll give you first bite at this one.
Well, I mean, there was a comment earlier about lobbyists, plural. I think the end of that piece was most telling. That these programs, regardless of their results, continue to expand. Bail bondsmen are very effective at what they do, but do a very poor job of delivering the message of what we do to the stakeholders, the judges, the county commissioners, the politicians. We don't have lobbyists as an industry. We don't have a big team. We have a very small group, of dedicated agents that are fighting to preserve what we do for a living. If you carry the message to the judges and the county commissioners and the state legislators, they're shocked to find out what that news piece just told you. They're not aware that we're paying for ineffective programs. But that's the reality. Regardless of the poor results they have, they continue to expand.
Mark, I have to ask you this question. How do you decide whether or not you're going to bond someone out?
It comes down to really the only consideration in writing a bond is, can I guarantee this person's appearance in court? It's very simple. That's the obligation. So if the friends and the family and the coworkers are willing to become financially accountable for the person's appearance, then it's a good bond. If the defendant has no one willing to stand for him, in other words, he's already burned all his bridges with his mother, his aunt, his grandmother, his coworkers, his family, then that person is not a good risk to appear. The reason why private bail works so well is that we create a web, like a spider web, consisting of friends and family of the defendant, and we bring everyone in and make them financially accountable for the appearance of the defendant. Once mom and dad and the grandmother and the coworkers are willing to guarantee the person will appear in court, in the overwhelming majority of cases, that person does appear in court. The reason why these publicly funded programs fail is no one's accountable. If a person fails to appear, there's not a single person in the system who suffers for that. So, like I said, it's just one more open felony warrant in the system. Bail works because not only the bondsman, but the people closest to the defendant are accountable for this person's appearance.
Now, before we went on air, we were chatting, and you told me you'd been in the bail bond industry for, what, 20 years?
Pretty much, yes, sir.
Yeah. I mean, of the bonds you have personally written, you know, how many have failed to show up?
It's not a question of how many failed to show up. There'll always be, because of the business that we're in, there'll always be a percentage of defendants who fail to appear, no matter how they're released. The question is, the key question is, what happens when a private bondsman such as myself posts a bail? If the person fails to appear, we go out and get them. Cobra has abundant experience in that. Rod has abundant experience in that. Like news piece you just said, we literally go to the four corners of the earth to return the defendant. In those rare cases where we fail in our obligation and are unable to bring the fugitive back to justice, we pay a substantial financial penalty, 1,000% of the money that we grossed when we wrote the bond. So when a bondsman like Rod collects $500, if he fails to have the person appear in court, he pays $5,000 to Duval County with no cost to the taxpayers. So it's not a question of how many people may have failed to appear. It's a question of what happens when they fail to appear. We either go get them or pay a strong financial penalty. At the beginning of the show, I mentioned Philadelphia, where they don't have private bondsmen. They send a bill when the people fail to appear. The bill was $1.5 billion. At the end of the day, they said, well, the best course is to write that off. We'll never collect it. So in Philadelphia, you don't have the fugitive, you don't have the payment, and you have open felony warrants. In Florida, where a bond is written, you either have the defendant, which is true in most states, or you have a absolute financial payment to the county.
Rod, you're in a similar situation to Mark. What did you make of the news item I played?
Simon, the thing that I have done, the research on this pretrial release programs, if people just take the time out and educate themselves to start off with, the bondsman, instead of listening to their friends or other bondsmen, when they hear something, go check it out. Don't listen without checking it out. Educate yourself. And what I have done is educated myself. When it came to pretrial release, the first thing I started with, who is the board of this pretrial release? They have a board. And 9 times out of 10 in every county I check, there's a judge a part of that board, or there's a judge family member a part of that board, or there's a politician a part of that board. That's why pretrial is getting the funding in which it is getting, because they have the right people on their board. You said it, the recording said judges allowing this. That's just like me and my friends. If I have friends, we're going to have meetings and everything, and we're going to say, okay, well, this week we're going to bond out 10 people, and don't worry about the collateral. Don't worry about this. Let's just bond them and see how the coin flips. That's our discretion. As a bail bond agent, we really don't have that discretion, because we have to answer to the general agent and the insurance company, or if you're direct, to the insurance company. We really don't have that, because by state law, that falls back on the agent. And what insurance company does is, if you cannot pay that, you are indebted to them until you do. But the problem is that if you just check the board of these pretrial release programs, I guarantee you, you'll be surprised of who's handling that board.
Cobra, I'm sure you're chomping at the bit.
Oh, buddy, I'll tell you. You know, it's like Rod said, it's about educating yourself. And you know, scripture came to my mind about that, and it's Judges 15:15. He said, and with a fresh jawbone. Well, the word fresh don't mean fresh. It means putrefied or rotted. But with a rotted, what they call fresh, a rotted jawbone of ass, Samson killed 1,000 men. So that's what's going on out here with the jawbone of an ass or two, fresh or purified, putrid, whatever. They one person tell a lie to another person tell a lie. Pretty soon they believe it is truth, and they go ahead and pass it, and it's all good. I'm sitting here looking at these stats from the OPEGA report, and basically, you know, Broward County is a small county, but they got about $6 million a year funded for pretrial, and Metro-Dade is about the same thing. But the largest county in the state of Florida is Palm Beach. And Palm Beach has only got a $1.5 million budget. I think I want to move to Citrus County, because they only got a $54,000 budget. I mean, you look at these budgets going across, you know, why is Broward County higher than Metro-Dade? Well, you have to go down there and understand who's fun. Like Rod said, who's sitting on these boards? What slick bondsman is now putting themselves in the middle of pretrial? And first of all, to me, it sounds like some type of solicitation. How can a bondsman be involved in pretrial decision makings or any kind of private, you know, discussions about how to improve the system or any of that? I don't know how a private, how a commercial bondsman could be in the middle of pretrial business, which is government business. It sounds to me like that's solicitation. And I asked Rod a question earlier today. It doesn't really have to do with pretrial, but these guys who are slamming bonds, they just, all of a sudden, the name pops in their head to go to the computer, and they rush down to the jail, and they bond any given individual right out of jail. And I don't understand how that's not some form of solicitation, where you just start dropping bonds, and you don't have any adimitors, or you ain't talked to nobody. I just don't understand it. And Miami, for many, many years, Incidentally, Mark, I wanted to ask you, in the 20 years,
yeah.
I'm sure you've been down to Metro a bunch of times, about how many bonds would you estimate that you've written in 20 years down there, Mark?
Mark? Numerically, thousands of bonds.
Thousands. And then the other question is, do you actually go out and pick up your own skips and take them back to jail or what?
From all over the world.
Okay. So you got familiarity with Metro Jail and the court down there. You see these bondsmen down there soliciting and doing all that kind of stuff. The whole system's got to be revamped. You know, we got to start educating each other about what's going on out here, and then we can carry it on to pretrial. But right now, you got our brothers and sisters thinking that this pretrial business attached to a bond is good stuff. But I'm here to tell you, it won't be long, and you don't have to worry about the 10% rule kicking in. They're going to kick us out of the way because pretrial is such a good program. And so that's the purpose of this today, to discuss and get it out there. And I just kind of wanted everybody's thoughts on the panel. Can you see pretrial ever being working, or is the government just going to keep their hand?
It has nothing to do whether it works or not. It's all about the almighty dollar for them. It's run
there
like a business. They don't care if this guy molested a kid. They don't care if this person's broken into a house. They don't care. What they care about is what they can fill their pockets with. That's the bottom line.
Damn. But he's a rookie, and the rookie, Rod, among us all, you know?
The problem is I love to speak straight and talk straight, and Matt, thank you for speaking straight.
Yes, sir.
That's right. Hey, Matt. Matt didn't show up last week. I got to tell on him.
I hate you.
I got to tell on him. Simon, we were calling him. Matt, where you at? Matt done fell into a damn... Matt done got drunk on us is what happened.
Well,
At least I was smart enough to save, you know, the embarrassment and of myself. So,
so at least he's telling the truth.
I can't even drink.
I like
so,
that.
No.
All right, guys. Before you get into a food fight, I do have a question. When you connect pretrial release with a bond, how the hell does that work? I mean, who's paying the bond? You know,
the defendant,
the taxpayer. Do the feds give you like 10%? And
if
the guy doesn't turn up, you know, it's up to you to hunt him down.
We have to pay the bond if we don't find him. Here's the deal, Simon. Rod spoke wrong there. Listen, when pretrial loses him, taxpayers paying that whatever the hell they were paying. They paying on the front end. Now on the bond, if a bail bond is attached to it, we paying that shit. We either bring him back or we're paying it. If we bring him back, we lose the credit for bringing him back. If we pay the bond, we lose the credit for that, too. They keep all that damn money.
Well, it's not necessary only the money, Simon. It's the stats. See, we care about staying in business. And the problem is that bondsmen are not understanding is that by attaching a bond to any form of pretrial release, the pretrial wins. There is no win in bail bonding when a bond is attached to any form
okay.
of pretrial.
Hold on. We have a caller.
Hello,
we have a caller from 239 area code. What's your name and... What would you like to chirp in about?
Well, I own Get Smart Bail Bonds in Fort Myers, and I had direct dealings with pretrial with bond only about maybe 3 weeks ago. And what I discovered is that the pretrial program has not, if they want this, which is a bad idea, but if they're trying to choke it down, then they need to link us with them in a professional manner, because they absolutely treated me like a second-class citizen. I caught them not giving the defendant the correct information when he was bonded out. I had to backtrack and call the jail to insist that I talk to the pretrial officer to have some understanding as to what they expected of him the next morning, because the dates were all incorrect. They would not allow me to speak to him, and I wanted confirmation as to what the requirements were for the next morning so he would not violate, and I could not get cooperation. So I had to go out of my office, go down to the pretrial office, ask to speak to the supervisor, and told them how I was treated. And I said, if we're going to work together in some capacity, then we need to have some kind of mutual respect. And I was very upset. And I said, if I hadn't insisted all this, my defendant would have bonded out, not known what he was doing, because, of course, he was Hispanic and he couldn't speak English. And it would have been a fiasco. So whoever's putting all this connection together, it's bad. And I'm taking it to the judges, because I sit in first appearance and I see judges vehemently reject pretrial, and I see some judges that are pretrial happy. And just like today, they just sent everybody out on pretrial today. Very little bond. So that's my experience. And I can't tell you how many people come in and want to get off pretrial, and they're stuck. They have to go hire a private attorney to get off a pretrial. So
it is possible to get off pretrial, but
it is
only if you have an attorney pushing and pulling.
That's right, and you have to pay money and take time. But a lot of people, the other thing I'm told by the defendants is when they are being processed inside the jail, they are being encouraged to sign on pretrial. They're being pushed and prodded to that side of the court, and they're not explained that they're going to have random drug screens. They're not explained all the out-of-pocket expenses. They just see, ooh, I'm getting out and I don't have to pay any money. So they're kind of misleading the clientele inside the jail, and that's another problem.
I'm sure our panel we'll have some questions. Cobra, I'll start with you.
You got missing. That's Nancy Kelly right there, getting Marbella bond. She knows business inside out. You know, I was talking to her earlier today, and I was just overwhelmed with the amount of information that she's collected, and she's a very strong advocate. To if I was going to appoint somebody to be in charge of policing, I'd put her in charge of it, because she damn sure knows what's going on, and she's not self-serving.
This was the young lady who gave you the links.
That's right, that's her.
Oh.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Right.
I think we should put billboards up, all the billboards that go close to downtown, and we should put down "Say No to Pretrial" with a big, like they say "No to Drugs," and we should be promoting anti-pretrial. And if the taxpayers find out that their tax dollars are affording these programs, I guarantee this whole thing is going to go in a whole different direction, because the taxpayers do not know. That's what's happening with their money. They don't know.
You're exactly right, Nancy. Palmetto Insurance Company is mainly out of South Carolina. South Carolina is almost completely nil of any pretrial release due to their efforts. America, the counties make money off of bail bondsmen. We pay a lot of money back to the counties. Pretrial costs money. That $5 million budget that pretrial has for Broward County, for example, $90,000 a year, $1.5 million for Lee County, and so on and so forth. You know, those are costs to the taxpayer. The bondsmen in this commercial bail, we fund the counties. They make money off of us, but we don't catch everybody. And, you know, there's a percentage of that money that goes back into the schools and everything else. All this is all pretrial does is take it away from the schools, away from this, away from that. It's just another burden that we don't need. But my biggest question is, how can we tax a defendant who is innocent until proven guilty? How can we tax him twice? How can we put him on pretrial and put him on a bond? Well, I know, but the reason is we have made so much packet that pretrial doesn't work. So shut us up as bondsmen. We're going to let you, and we're going to let you have pieces of pie too. Shut up. Write the bond. Something goes wrong, you go pick him up, because our numbers is going to go up, your numbers is going to go down, but it sounds like a good deal. You were starving 3 years ago. Now we're helping you a little bit. We're going to let you write bail right along beside us. Shut up and do it. No, it's not constitutional. It's wrong.
Okay. Let's let the rest of the panel have a go at Nancy. And by the way, Nancy, thank you for giving Cobra those links. If you'd called in earlier, you could have heard the audio versions.
Well, I had customers. I've been busy. But I tried to get in as quick as I could.
Rod, would you like to talk to Nancy?
Well, Nancy, yes, I would. And thank you very much for the information in which you provided. I will also have James upload that on our website, and I really, really love you and thank you for that information.
You're very welcome.
Mark?
Hey, Simon, real quick. Cobra,
mm-hmm.
I gotta step off the panel. It was a pleasure. Mark, Rod, I'll be seeing you soon.
All right, Matt.
All right, take care.
Well, I guess it never ends in the bail bond world. Mark, do you have any questions for Nancy or any comments about what she just said?
Just a comment. I think I commend Nancy.
Hold on,
Nancy, and
I'm on a radio talk show. Hold on.
Simon,
she's like
radio.
I was. She's like I was a couple of weeks ago, huh? Taking care of business at the same time.
Right.
I don't want to see the radio show get between Nancy and a paying customer.
Sorry, guys.
No, not at all. I think the most important thing Nancy said was that the taxpayers really have no idea whatsoever that these things are going on. And I mean, a taxpayer has a vague idea that that we understand what the police do. They arrest an accused criminal. They put him in jail. Most citizens are shocked to find out that our tax dollars are then used to release them from jail, with no one being accountable for their appearance after that. So a lot of this is just a process of trying to educate the taxpayers and, more importantly, the players in the system. The county commissioners,
exactly.
And the
judge. We need to go to the county commissioners and show them. We need to actually compile our staff to show that how effective we are.
The other thing that we as an industry have to be really careful about is we tend to work for our job, and there may be individual pretrial workers at the jail that we can work with, or have a relationship, or talk with, because we're just good citizens. But we can't lose sight of the fact that the pretrial association of pretrial workers would like to see bail for profit eliminated. And they don't make any secret of that. If you go to their websites,
all right,
the National Association of
Pretrial Relief. Using a cell phone in a wind tunnel. Please stop. Okay, sorry, Mark.
That's all right. My point was just that we can't be naive about the fact that the National Association of Pretrial Workers would like to see what we do eliminated. And many bondsmen will say, it's not that big a problem in my jurisdiction, and we work together. I think that's a mistake. If you look at the websites for the national associations, they're crystal clear. They believe that bonding for profit, what we do for a living and what we do so well, they believe it is immoral and should be made illegal, like Illinois or we said earlier, like Philadelphia. So I don't think we can afford to be naive and think, well, we can work together. These programs like what Nancy's talking about where a judge lets someone out on a misdemeanor on a private bail bond and the felony charge on pretrial release punishes us, makes us accountable for the appearance of the defendant while strengthening the publicly funded release program.
Well, the other thing, too, is that private bail, I get to know my families. I go out in the field. I know my people. And I communicate with them, and I'm more effective in encouraging them to complete their process. And I have probably a 99% rate of show, for real, because I go and I'll go have dinner. I'll sit and have a bowl of chili, or I'll drive out, you know, way out to Lehigh and hear their family story and whatever. It's about people. And pretrial is just about numbers, just pushing them through. And that's not going to correct behavior. You got to correct behavior one client at a time. And you can affect the rate of people going back in and out of jail over and over. What you probably guys don't know is I'm a retired school teacher. So I know very well about you want good return as far as what you're doing, and if you put it out there and you get what you put in, and pretrial does not put anything in. It's all numbers. It's all just pushing through like a herd of cattle, and it doesn't work. It's not going to work. Not like that.
You know, Simon, that's the only thing I don't like about Nancy. The only thing I don't like, because I'm her pickup guy, and she starves my ass because she does have about a 99% return rate, and if I wait on her to have a damn skip, because she is like a school teacher, I swear to God, she'll pop them in, get me coming to the office while I'm on the way to, never mind, Cobra, they came in. She's good and effective at what she does.
It's because you gotta love people.
Nancy, what I like about what you said is the main thing, that you have constant contact with your people. But the problem is, pretrial is about numbers. It's
right.
About how many people did they serve this week or this month. They don't show numbers of the failure of the system, because no one really care about that. The taxpayers is not being educated about that. We in the Bail Bond Association have for years paid lobbyists to inform the legislators and the public. We have in our local area that we supposed to have a lobbyist and a PR people that supposed to make commercials and notify and inform the general public of the failure of the pretrial system. But hey, it done turned now completely around, where that the president of the company, president of the association now, love pretrial and bail bond. I don't understand that. I really don't. I can't put
I think we need to be like Morgan and Morgan. We need to launch a state campaign, billboards, radio
exactly.
commercials, and we need to launch it out there in front of the public. And that's the only way you're gonna get results is knowledge.
And we need
power.
To have another show. We need to have another show on this failed system of our associations.
And don't tell me the insurance companies don't have money to do this. If they really care about us and they want to keep us going, they should all pull together as a industry and say, let's launch a campaign against these programs. And you watch what will happen.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree.
You know what? Both of y'all just hit it on the head right there. If we can get the various insurance companies to send some money to Morgan and Morgan, man, let me tell you what.
The only problem is no marijuana involved.
Morgan is shut them down in a minute, boy. I'm telling you, they get
Well, we can get a Bonds. We can get a sexy Bonds woman up on the billboard like Hooters, and it'll all come together.
That's right.
Okay.
You want me over Pre-Child? There you go.
All right. I'm going to ask my question again. The big deal right now is tying pre-trial release to a bond. And I didn't get a straight answer the first time I asked it, so I'm going to try it in a slightly different way. Okay, I've done this nasty thing to my neighbor's gecko, and I'm hauled off to jail. I've got $1,000 bond, and the judge or someone tells me, you're a first-time gecko offender, right? So we're going to offer you a pre-trial release. However, there has to be a bond attached. Now, I say, fine. You know, I promise I won't give nasty looks again to another gecko as long as I live. But, you know, who writes the bond? Because
the bail bondsman. A bail bondsman. See, here's what's going to happen. Pre-trial is going to go ahead and send you out, but you're going to come back every week, and you're going to be limited to how many beers you can drink. And God knows you're going to be on pain pills. You're going to be pissed. You're going to have to drive down there and show them your face and answer some questions. But you're also going to have a bail bondsman that your wife's going to go see and give them $100 and something worth $1,000, and then the bondsman's happy. Just don't leave county without telling him, or he'll put your ass back in jail. So you're accountable to both of these individuals. Why, I don't know, because it seems like your offense was minor. You know, you pissed off a gecko, so what?
You're double dipping. That's what it is. You're double dipping. And not only that, if they're going to enlist us to help with pre-trials, then they need to throw us some kind of stipend to pay us our time.
If you write a bond with pre-trial,
that sounds great.
Hey, listen, Nancy, if you post a bond right along beside pre-trial, like this one you did last night, say they did pre-trial and $100,000 bond. All right? If that damn defendant don't show up, all right, I'm coming to you for $10,000. I think the damn state should pay me another $10,000 because I'm doing their job too.
That's what I'm saying. You pressure people is you gotta ask for money. We need to go and say, okay, you want to do this program? Then pay us too. We get a cut of the taxpayer dollar.
Who we have doing that?
Nobody. I said that's if they're going to force this on us.
No, that's not true. That's not true. Mark is a member. I think he's not a board member, but he's a member of the state association and the national association. So, Mark, fill us in.
Fill you in on what?
Good question.
Your opinion.
Mark handled in business as well.
I don't think that scenario. I'm not familiar with it. Again, in Florida, the law says the only way you can be released pretrial is on a bail. I think what happens is when you say they're mixed, I don't think that they're saying this person is released on a $10,000 bond and pretrial. Unless I'm wrong, I think
yes,
most jurisdictions.
That's how they
I
do
think
it.
What,
that's
I think
exactly
what's happening is, I believe what's happening is they're saying, look, I'm releasing this guy to pretrial release for molesting the gecko. But when he molested the gecko,
I didn't.
Let me finish.
I'd like to point out, I did not molest the gecko.
Okay, you alleged.
I just stared at it.
The gecko. Okay, when they arrested you for that, though, you flinched, and so they charged you with resisting arrest without violence.
My experience with what's happening in Florida is the judge is saying on the gecko charge, I'm putting him in pretrial, and on the misdemeanor of resisting without violence, I'm setting a $500 bond.
Exactly.
And so
what I'm finding
takes place in Florida is when the person fails to appear, pretrial is just sitting back and saying it's no problem. Nancy's going to go get it. Nancy the bondsman's going to go get him so she doesn't lose her $500, and that protects their felon. I think that's what's happening in Florida, not so much that on a single bond.
Oh, no, it is a single bond because I just took a guy out for a DUI.
It's on a single bond, buddy.
I got a guy I took out 5 days ago because he's like three or four DUIs.
So when the judge sets the bond condition, what is he saying? He's saying $5,000 bond and
$25,000 bond with pretrial supervision, and he had to get a bracelet on his ankle too. On top
right,
of that,
right.
All three, one bond, bingo.
Which of course the bracelet is also a gigantic figment of everyone's imagination.
No, it's an alcohol bracelet.
Right. Screen, which
and I have the case and the whole nine yards, and I can give you the case number, and you can see it was all part of the full condition of release.
Right. And by the way, which is neither here nor there, but some of the insurance companies that you're saying need to donate to the industry, which I agree with, own those monitors. So
we're all interlinked in some kind of way.
Yeah.
You know, everybody. That's one of the things I've discovered in industry.
Right.
I'm going back to my gecko story. There was only one charge. I did not resist arrest. All I did was scare the gecko.
Right. What I'm familiar with, Simon, in Dade County is, I mean, at least the way it works in Miami-Dade County is, if they set pretrial, it's an alternative to the posting of a bond. Now she's saying in Lee County, the judge is saying, "No,
anymore.
I want both. I want a bond and I want the pretrial program."
It's not anymore, Mark. It's not anymore. They changed this. In fact, Broward County just came on Wayne Spath. I was talking to Wayne Spath, and I asked him to come on this program several weeks ago. He didn't want to come on the program, and I said, why not? Because he's working with the judges, and he's working with the pretrial, because now they got a new sheriff in, and they got rid of all the pretrial people, and the guys over at pretrial now are working with them. So I said, well, how are they working with you, Mr. Bondsman? And basically, it is this. They're attaching a bail to the pretrial, single charge, it doesn't matter, and the same thing is happening in Duval. And the president of the Bail Bond Association up there told me that it was a great thing. It was great. This is some good stuff. So nobody wanted to come on the show because they
ludicrous.
May I suggest that you have on a show, you have interview clients that have had both programs, because I have a whole list of them. And I know one for sure that would be glad to tell you his experience with pretrial and bond. Because he was livid mad.
Yeah, I know many clients have had to pay big money to attorneys to get off of that.
I know a guy that he said, anything I can do, and if you decide to go after this, because he said, I'll be happy to tell my story.
Right.
I say,
well, Nancy, you can guarantee that you'll be hearing from me.
Sounds good.
Hell yeah. That's why I keep saying it's unconstitutional, guys, because it is a single charge, and it's got both pretrial and a bond. And so, you know, why are you double-dipping? Why? Now, you watch them. They're going to come up with some shit now. Now they're going to do that old flinch maneuver. They got you for the single charge, that's pretrial. Now the flinch, that's resisting without violence. Now we need a bond on that. So there's two charges now. So maybe that'll shut us up for a minute. Ain't none of them going to shut me up.
The problem is, Colbert, if you give him pretrial, why not give pretrial?
That's
simple.
Right.
If you're going to give pretrial for the GEICO, give pretrial for the resistance. It's so simple.
Exactly.
It's so simple. You get pretrial for the GEICO, get pretrial for the resistance. Don't make us responsible for pretrial. And that's exactly what is happening. No one is responsible for pretrial. So, okay, since no one is responsible, let's make the bondsmen responsible. They'll be responsible for our pretrial. Come on, let's tell it straight. And his question to you, Mark, was, you are a part of the Bail Bond Association. Who do we have? Who do we have lobbying for the bail bondsmen in Tallahassee and to the general public? Was the question.
Okay, that's a great question, because somebody earlier said we have all these lobbyists, all this money, and that's simply not the case. We have one state association in Florida. Most agents are not paying members, and even though the stakes are very, very high, it's just a sad reality. I believe our industry is threatened, but most agents won't write $100 or whatever to join the association and pay for a lobbyist. The current lobbyist that they just hired is a guy named Harry Ballard. There are no big, giant committees or lots of money to spare. His contract is $45,000 for 1 year to protect our industry in Tallahassee and hopefully work with us with some legislation that benefits us all, including what we're talking about here, to fight pretrial. But the reality is the overwhelming majority of licensed bail agents in Florida don't contribute. It's only a small handful of people that spend their time, money, and effort and raise the $45,000. Most of that comes through continuing education. The association offers classes, and they charge $100 or whatever it is. But that's what we have. There is no giant... No insurance companies where you say, listen, the insurance companies will come to the rescue. That's not the case.
But why not? Because there's 600 insurance companies.
No. You say there are 600 insurance companies. Hold on, Nancy. Hold on. There are 29 that are licensed to do bail in Florida.
And of those
29, 14 or so do the lion's share. And of those 14 companies, three insurance companies are members of the one state association. So we always wait for someone else to come forward and rescue us, and what we find is what just took place in New Jersey. We find we get our clock cleaned. I don't know if anybody in the panel watches the newspapers of what just took place in New Jersey, but the agent there said, well, it's no problem. I'm sure there'll be lobbyists, and I'm sure the insurance company will come to the rescue, and that didn't happen. And legislation passed up there that was devastating to bail agents, and it calls into question whether there will be such a thing as a bail agent in New Jersey in a couple of years. The same could happen in Florida if we don't set aside our petty differences and work together. This idea that somebody else is going to run in and rescue us is a fallacy. When we say, who are the lobbyists, the answer to that question is, the lobbyist is whoever we hire. And we hire the ones that we decide get together and do. So we just recently, as a state association, I said recently, in the last week, signed a contract to pay this guy named Harry Ballard, who's very well regarded, $45,000, which is not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, represent the bail agents of Florida for 1 year. I wish we had a team of lobbyists, and I wish we had... If we had 50% of the agents in the state of Florida participate, we would have no worries about money. But like I said, the overwhelming majority don't participate.
But what does a lobbyist do other than take
money?
A lobbyist does a tremendous amount of things for the bail industry. These things like, for example, in Florida, that a bail bond expires 3 years after it's supposed to come from laws that were enacted by bail agents. If we want to, right now, a judge has the discretion, when Simon gives a funny look at a gecko, to set conditions of release that include a corporate surety bond and free trial. It would be very easy to draft legislation. But we drafted as an industry legislation that says one bond per charge. COBRA will know, anybody that's been in the bail bond business for a number of years knows, they used to have what is called a blanket bond. So if a guy had 35 charges,
they would say, well, there's one bond, $15,000, and it covers all 15 of these charges, 35 charges. It was bail agents and the lobbyists that changed the law, said there should be one bond per charge. It's not that big a deal to envision a law that would say you cannot be forced to post a bond and be enrolled in a pretrial release program. And if we had that kind of legislation, a judge wouldn't be able to set a bond condition like that.
Okay. So I'm going to play the role of Joe Lobbyist. I've got this $45,000 retainer. What do I do with it? Do I take the judge out for lunch and drinks?
It's less a matter of judges than it is state legislators.
Oh, okay.
And what a lobby does is really inform and educate. We started earlier by Nancy saying that the taxpayers don't have any idea of what's going on. Well, neither do many of the legislators. Now, with term limits, the legislator turns over frequently. They don't understand what we do for a living, and so the lobbyist's primary first function is to educate lawmakers what's going on, so that they can go to lawmakers and say, you may not know this, but in Lee County right now, there's this ridiculous program that costs all kinds of money that makes people give up urine tests three times a week and does all these other ridiculous things. It does nothing to enhance public safety or ensure the appearance of defendants. And through the process of lobbying those lawmakers, many times their eyes open up and they say these words, just like your audience does. You're kidding me. Our taxpayers are going for that? And they'll say,
okay,
that's
so
the thing.
It's not the judge you have to take out for lunch. It's the lawmaker.
Primarily, yes.
Okay. Sounds like it's $45,000 worth of food.
Well, I don't think that's the case. I mean, in past years, there's been a lot more money for lobbyists. But right now, like I said, most of the people in the industry, and I know times are tough and the economy is rough, but most bail agents are not contributing or doing their fair share. In years past, we've had lobbyists that made six figures through the association, and there have been laws changed. There have been laws changed to benefit every agent in the state.
Well, I assume that, you know, through belt tightening, lunch is now held at Taco Bell.
Yeah. I mean, here's what you have to understand, Simon. The Association of Counties in Florida has a lobbyist, and they pay six figures for that lobbyist. The Association of Florida Sheriffs Association has a lobbyist, and he's very well paid. These pretrial release programs have lobbyists, and they're very well paid. So if we're not represented in Tallahassee, we lose.
Okay. I'm looking at the clock. We've run about 40 minutes over budget. I'm a lobbyist, so that means that the very next person I'm going to be taking to McDonald's, and they're just going to get a small order of fries. But other than that, I do want to thank everyone that has turned up today, and I want to go once around the panel to get the panel's final thoughts. Cobra, I'll start with you.
Well, I just appreciate, Mark, I thank you for showing up for this show, Rod, and of course Todd, he had to jump off and go kick in a door or something. But I appreciate, Simon, the time that you've given the bail industry and, you know, anything we can do to help the bail industry, you know, do better. Like I said, I don't write bonds. I just chase them, but I got to have something to chase. So, you know, you guys can write a little looser now because pretrial's got you back.
Good one. And Rod.
Simon, if I can stop laughing, I can talk. The thing is that I want to tell it, every bail bond agent out there, go to your bail bond association, listen to the meetings. If you find that the president and vice president of that association going in the direction that they should be going, join. If you don't find they going into that direction, do what you do. Here at Surety 3 and Palmetto Surety, we go to the politicians and the state governments. We do it ourselves. We don't believe in joining this agency or that association because we come to find out they all, no, I'm not going to say it, but I'm a straight shooter. But the problem is, you guys look at the association. If they have closed meetings, you don't want the association, no way. So other than that, good luck.
And Nancy, it's the first time we've spoken, but you're clearly outspoken. You're right up there with the rest of the people I know.
She's handling business.
Oh.
I'm here. I just, I'm a very enthusiastic person for the industry, and I went all the way in education, so I have master's degrees, and I see a lot of great things that the bail bond industry can do for the private people out in their community. And if we get the right recipe going, I think we can really we can stomp pretrial and show how we care. We're citizens. We're members of the community. And we're not governed by, you know, numbers. We're governed by one client at a time. And that's what, you know, back in the old days, that's what life is about, treating people the way you wish to be treated, being respectful. Now, if you go up to a pretrial floor and you see all these people sitting in the hall, I just, the way they talk to them, the way they run them in and out like a herd of cattle, it's disgusting. It's not treating people like humans. It's treating them with a number. And that cannot equal a good effect in the end. And so it's a revolving door. In they go, out they go. In they go, out they go. And it's not working. So.
And Mark, you get the last word.
Well,
actually, that's
Bud.
Not technically true. I will get the last word.
Thank you for having me, Simon. And if you ever have any problem with a gecko or anything else, feel free to call me anytime. It's been a delight. I love what I do for a living. I'm proud to work with bail agents. My friends are bail agents. My family's bail agents. I believe in what bail does. It's my livelihood. I'm involved with my local association, my state association, my national association. And I think if we work together, I'm with Nancy. I think when we communicate our message clearly, it's a message with tremendous value, and the service that we provide is invaluable. So thank you very much for letting us participate in a discussion on bail. And like I said, if you have a problem with a gecko or anything else, call me anytime.
I certainly will. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, safe, and healthy week. We'll be back next Saturday at the same time with another episode of America's Most Unwanted. Till then, goodbye.